Thank you, Michael. Thank you for organizers for inviting me here. So I will talk about AMSI and Turan type problems. So I will give short introduction to both questions. Then I will describe some simple but yet apparently quite powerful probabilistic lemma which can be useful in attacking this problem. And finally, I mentioned few open questions where this lemma was useful to obtain some progress on these questions. And please, since, as Vitaly mentioned, people come from different fields and backgrounds, you can not wait till the Sunday, and you can stop me anytime you want and ask questions. So let me start with the Ramsey theory. So the main idea behind the Ramsey theory was very well captured by the following joke of Danny Kleitman, which says, of three ordinary people, two must have the same sex. Talking more seriously, Ramsey theory refers to very large body of deep results in mathematics, which have one underlying idea of philosophy, which says that in large systems, complete disorder is impossible. So the name of Ramsey theory comes from the following person, Frank Plumpton Ramsey, which was very remarkable man, despite that he died quite early, age 28. He already succeeded to make very important contributions to mathematics, logics, and economy. And one of these contributions was the Ramsey theorem, which he proved in 1930. The theorem says the following. I will use the most simple version, and then I tell what can be extended here immediately. So he says the following, that if you take complete graph on n vertices, so it means you take n vertices, all possible pairs, n choose two pairs, and then you color these pairs by two colors, red and green. Then if your n is sufficiently large, no matter how you color these edges, you will always find either k vertices such that all edges between them are red, we call it red clique, or green clique of size L. So no matter how you color, you always will find either red or green clique. And of course, you can immediately extend this almost with the same proof for more than two colors. And you can also color, instead of coloring pairs, you can color subsets of size R, and again say that you will find either K vertices where all subsets have red color, or K vertices where all subsets have green color. So talking about the history of Ramsey theory, you cannot not mention another paper of Erdős Szekeres. So Erdős Szekeres rediscovered the Ramsey theorem, and the way it was, they were interested in actually some completely different problem. So it started with the observation of Esther Klein, which she noticed that if you have five points in the plane, then no matter how you put your 5 points, 4 would be always in the convex position. So you'll always find 4 points in the convex position. And then Erdős and Szekeres immediately ask the following question. So suppose I want not 4 points, but I want many points, 1,000 points, 1,000,000 points. So is it always true that if I put sufficiently many points in the plane, I will always find a convex n-gon? And they showed that this is indeed the case. And to prove this, to prove that if you put sufficiently many points in the plane, you find a convex n-gon, they needed a Ramsey theory. So you see the proof is immediate, knowing the Ramsey theorem, and it's very nice first application of Ramsey theorem to other field, to geometry. So what you do, you color all 4 tuples by 2 colors. You color them green if they form convex foregon, and you color them red otherwise. And now you know that you cannot have 5 points such that all 4 tuples on these 5 points are color red. So therefore, you will have a lot of points such that all 4 tuples are color green. And then it's very easy to see that if you have a big set where all 4 points from convex n-gon, then the total set forms convex n-gon. And it's very hard to overestimate the importance of this paper, except this result. They have a few other very important Ramsey-type results, for example, that if you have n squared plus 1 numbers, then you always have n either decreasing in the decreasing order or n in the increasing order. And one safely say that this kind was kind of very starting point of the fast development of Ramsey's theory in combinatorics. And today, speaking more generally, the Ramsey's theory is very well developed and broad theory which has many connections. So you see one example to geometry, but it's connected to number theory, ergodic theory, information theory, computer science, to name few of them. So we know that we always have sufficiently large n such that any coloring produces either red or green clique. So of course the natural question people immediately ask after they realize this fact is, what are the good bounds, or what are the bounds at all you can give on this number n? The people from the very beginning were interested in Ramsey numbers, so let me define RKL is the minimal such n that color complete graph on n vertices into colors, I will get either red copy of complete graph on k vertices or green copy of complete graph on l vertices. Ramsey proof, he kind of deals with infinite version of the theorem, so you don't see what is the bound which you get from. Is a similar proof was given by Erdős Szekeres, it's used induction, so you can see what is the bound, and the bound which follows -1, and one of the main questions people were interested in is to bound the diagonal, so-called diagonal Ramsey numbers, so when you want to find clique of equal size, either in green or red color, so K equals L, and then this bound is exponential, so it's 2 to the 2K. So, if you have this exponential bound, so the natural question is how good it is, how fast these numbers should grow. And it's quite surprisingly that for a while after this bound was obtained, it wasn't clear that the growth of Ramsey numbers is even exponential. So you should remember that it was a time when mainly conjectures were made on the basis of examples which people were able to produce. And for some time, it was even believed that K square is the actual bound. So you just take K cliques, disjoint cliques of size k, you color them red, all the rest of the edges in between them you color green, and you see that you don't have any complete graph on k plus 1, let's say, vertices in either color, so it gives you k square, and it was somewhat surprising when Erdős came up with so-called existence argument, what we nowadays call probabilistic argument, which shows that the bound should be exponential. It's not exactly this close to this. So there is gap of 4 in the exponent, but the bound is exponential. And in modern language, you can really say this proof in two lines. So what he suggested, you just take random coloring.
Seven.
Okay.
You can do it more.
So actually, 4, because the lines are proved. But the idea is you just take a random coloring, pick every color independently with probability half, and then you just count. You see that with the overwhelming probability, your coloring will not contain a complete graph, which is either red or green. You just use a simple union bound. So you have n choose k possibility to k to choose k vertices, and then k vertices have k choose two edges, and the probability that you color all them red or green is exactly this number. So this, what I wanted to tell about, give you idea what type of questions you want to study in Ramsey's theory. Let me only mention that despite these bounds were obtained more than 50 years ago, more or less the current state of art is as it was 50 years ago. So since then was only very minor improvement to upper and lower bound, and the gap is still as it is, and it's one of the most important problems in the Ramsey theory, to close this gap. So closely related to Ramsey theory is so-called extremal graph theory, mainly the Turan-type problems, which you can attribute it to great Hungarian mathematician Paul Turan. So if in Ramsey theory we are interested in inevitable occurrence of some specific structure, if we partition larger structure in constant number of parts, In Turan's theory, we are interested in occurrence of some specific structure if the density of the edges goes beyond some threshold. So more precisely, let me define of the fixed graph H. We have other parameter n is the maximal number of edges in graph G on n vertices which contains no copy of H. And the theorem, which you can think as a starting point of the whole theory, was proved by Turan in 41, where he determined exactly this extremal number for all complete graphs on k vertices. Actually, for k equals 3, it was done later in the beginning of the century by Mantel. But the theorem is very nice and have very nice and appealing form. So it says, so think about very simple construction of the graph, dense graph, which will not contain a complete graph on k vertices. So if you think a little bit, you see that if you take k minus 1 sets of nearly equal size, if you partition your minus 1 sets of nearly equal size, and then use all the edges between these sets, you obtain a graph which does not contain a clique of size k, because you put your k points, at least two of them will fall inside one part, they will contain no edge between them. So the theorem says that this is the best you can do, not only in terms of the number of edges, but this is the only graph which will give you that many edges. So for example, if k equals 3, you can see that if you take complete bipartite graph, you will not find triangle, and theorem says that this is the best you can do. So these theorems answer this question, what is the extremal number of edges for one particular family, complete graphs. But surprisingly, the ideas which were developed here can be extended to handle quite a large variety of graphs, and this was done by Erdős and Stone. So to show you the theorem, let me make a definition. So by KKT, I denote a complete K-partite graph where every part has size T. So you just take a complete graph, you blow each part by T elements. So here is K3-2. You see two elements at every part and all edges between them. So what Erdős and Stone notice that if you take even complete K-partite graph where every part is of size T, you still cannot have much more, and of course much less, because the lower bound is the same, complete k minus 1 part graph, number of edges was a clique. So it says that if you take graph with that many edges, n choose 2 times k minus 2 over k minus 1, you know that you can construct such example without clique of size k. This theorem says that if you add a little bit, not only will you get a clique, actually get a blow-up of the clique, you will get much bigger graph, which contains a complete k-partite graphs with parts of size T. And this theorem was later extended and sharpened by various people, by Bolobash, Erdős, Simonovich, actually, with various combination of these authors. And now you know quite precise information. For example, this T shouldn't be constant. Your graph can grow. But for us, it would be important the following corollary. Note that this theorem immediately tells you the Turan number asymptotically for many, many graphs. So if you take a graph H and look on its chromatic number, so chromatic number is a minimal number of parts in which you partition the vertices such that every part is independent set, has no edges, then you easily see that if this minimum is k, then of course you cannot put the copy of H in k minus 1 partite graph, because the minimal number of parts should be k. On the other hand, using this Erdős-Stone theorem, you immediately see that if you find a big complete k partite graph, you will find there your copy of H, because H is naturally infinite vertices in k parts would be subgraph of k-partite graph. So it immediately tells you that the Turan number of any k-colorable graph, so most graphs with chromatic number bigger than 3, you know it asymptotically. So if you look on this formula, the natural question which immediately one should ask is what happens with k equals 2. You see, substituting here k equals 2 gives you only information that the Turan number of bipartite graph is O small of n square. So the natural question is, what is the right power of n for given bipartite graph? So let me tell you that Turan numbers of bipartite graphs is actually a complete mystery. So if for the graphs with chromatic number 3 we have very satisfactory answer, for bipartite graph even there is no conjecture what should be parameter on which this exponent will depend. So it's not clear given a bipartite graph H what would be the right exponent for this graph. So therefore, as a starting point, people were interested in some very natural and nice families of bipartite graph and try to determine their Turan numbers. So what are these families? So one of these families, of course, by analogy to complete graph, you take complete bipartite graph. So KTS is complete with parts T and S. Always assume that T is smaller than S. And another very natural family is even cycles. So note that the case of the odd cycles is already handled by this theorem because they are chromatic number 3. So the only case which remains is an even cycles. And let me mention these two theorems abound on the Turan numbers of both families. So Kovary, Shosh, and Turan in 54, they showed that if you have a graph which does not contain KTS, complete bipartite graph with parts T and S, then the number of edges is at most n to the power 2 minus 1 over T. And note here that it's important that only the smaller parts determines what is the bound. So you can have another part very large, you still get this bound. And for the even cycles, the Bondi and Szymanowicz proved the upper bound, which is n to the power 1 plus 1 over k, the cycle is of length 2k. Situation with upper bound, so what with respect to the lower bounds? Widely believed conjecture is that actually these bounds are tight. So the problem is, you see, here, to show this, you need a proof. To get a lower bound, you need a construction. And somehow, it seems that construction are usually harder to get. So you should be somewhat, in addition to clever, you should be somewhat lucky to get the construction which gives these bounds. So let me mention a few known results. Results, which was already mentioned in the previous talks, it's so-called Erdős-Reni or Erdős-Reni-Shosh graph. So this graph does not contain cycle of length 4, and you can see that this is the same as complete graph with sizes 2 and 2, so it's first graph in both families, and the number of edges in this graph is n to the 3 halves, which matches here this bound, so this is known. Brown obtained a similar tight lower bound for complete graphs K3-3. So the bound is 5/3, and again, you can always go back and see that this is tight. So surprisingly, it took 30 years until Kolaronia and Szabo, using construction, very nice construction, the variant of this projective norm graph, the usual norm graphs which Noga mentioned, showed that this bound is also tight for complete bipartite graph when very big. So if the one part is T and they showed another part is T factorial plus 1, then this is tight.
I have questions. But you said that to have construction is usually difficult and so on. So first step, you should explain why random does it work. Then it became difficult.
You check. Actually, if in the previous talk you already noticed that somehow some pathological things with this type of graph can happen. For example, in the example which Noga bring, the triangle-free graph, it has exceptionally high density. It looked like random, but didn't contain the triangles. So actually, here it's more or less a similar situation. We need graphs which have much higher density than the random graphs, and still does not contain even cycle or complete graph. So random graph begin to contain these creatures.
Not random graph.
No. And therefore, it's from this comes the difficulty. And as I said, you should be somewhat lucky because you're playing with algebraic construction. You do some things; they may work, they may not work. So the result of Kolle-Rogne ensemble was extended but by a long Rogne ensemble, and they improved this t factorial to t minus 1 factorial plus 1. The situation with cycles is even worse, so the only things except the cycles of length 4 which we know is the extremal numbers for cycles of length 6 and 10. This was done by Benson using so-called generalized n-gons. So this is the situation with Turan numbers of bipartite graph. And this is, as I said, one of the main important questions in the extremal graph theory. Given a bipartite graph, try to see how to bound, what should be the right exponent in the Turan number of this graph. So this finishes the first part of my talk. So let me now tell you about this lemma. And before I tell you about this lemma, so what is common denominator of these two problems? So if you think, you immediately see that what you usually have, you have the following equation in mind. You have two graphs, G and H. H is usually fixed. G is usually dense. And you want to answer if G contains a copy of H. So in the Turan graph, you immediately have this graph G, which has some bound on the number of edges. In the Ramsey case, you can always think about G to be the majority color, for example. So majority color has half of the edges. If you can say something about embedding in a very dense graph, it can help you in the Turan, in the Ramsey question as well. So I want some technique which will help me to embed fixed graph H in graph G, and there are such techniques in combinatorics, and later today you will see two very interesting talks by Miki Shimonovich and Yoshiko Hayakawa on the regularity lemma, which more or less a main canon which people use extensively in extremal graph theory and the Ramsey theory. So what I want to mention today is some more recent lemma which still already seems to have some nice application and maybe can complement this regularity lemma. So to give you intuition what we are looking for, let me tell you about what would be the useful configuration to find in your graph. So you have big graph G, let's say it has half of the edges, so what and you want to embed your graph H, so what you are looking for, what can help you? So the following thing can definitely help you. For example, suppose U, which has the following nice property. If you take D vertices in U, any vertices, and you look how many other vertices a graph connecting to all of them. Now it's where all these D tuple. If you know that there are always a lot of such vertices, it can be helpful. Why? For example, think about the case when your graph is bipartite. So you can put here inside you all the vertices from one part, and then you will begin to embed vertices from the other part one by one. So every time you come to embed the vertex, you look where its neighbors gone, so it's these D vertices, let's say. Then you know that you have a lot of choices to put your vertex. And even if some vertices are occupied, since you have a lot of choices, it's very likely that you will be able to continue this process. So this is the main intuition. So it's good to have sets where every D vertices have a lot of common neighbors. Then somehow greedily, just by one, you may be able to complete embedding of graph H. So if this is a useful configuration, let's check what we can hope on. So what means how many common neighbors the D-tuple can have. So if you have graph with density half, then on average, every D-tuple has n over 2 to the d common neighbors. Yes, think about your graph being random, every edge with probability half. Then if you fix d vertices, then one particular vertex is adjacent with probability 1 over 2 to the d. So on average, every D-tuple has n over 2 to the d common neighbors. On the other hand, it's quite known, I think, to everybody in this audience that if you have a random variable and you know something about expectation, it still can behave very widely. It doesn't mean that every d-tuple will necessarily have that many neighbors. And even if you have a lot of d-tuples which have that many neighbors, how to put them in one set? Maybe one appears here, another appears there. So it's very unlikely that all of them will happen in a one set. Therefore, it's somewhat surprising that you can show that indeed you can find rather large set U where every d-tuple has n common has a lot of common neighbors. And let me just illustrate by the following lemma. The variant of this lemma was proved before and appears in the paper of Rodolo-Kostochka. Another variant was used by Gowers, by myself. And I mentioned a few other results today where the variant of this lemma is used. So this lemma says that if you have a graph with half of the density, with half entries to edges, then you can find rather big subsets of size square root n, where every d-tuple has a lot of common neighbors, linear number of common neighbors, n divided by 2 to the 2d. So you can compare to what you expect, and you see that you're not doing much worse than expected. So here you know that on average it's 2 to the d, and here you have 2 to the 2d. So this is the lemma, and let me tell you something about the proof, because the proof is kind of surprising. Easy probabilistic argument, but the second main thing is that usually when you use probabilistic arguments, most of the time you're actually doing, so you're doing your random choices and then you hope that for the best. Somehow here you manage to do your random choices such that to bias outcome in your favor. And let me tell you this. So here is actually the idea, and then I will show you the computation. The idea is very simple, how to construct such set U. So what you're doing the following. You're picking half log n. Half log n is important for this outcome, but generally you pick some set of random vertices, and then your set U would be the set of all common neighbors of these vertices. So you pick random set, you look who is connected to everybody in this set, and this is your set U. So now let me at least intuitively explain why this should be a good choice. So you see what's going on. So you will have some vertices. Now if these vertices have small number of common neighbors, if for example you have two vertices which have only tiny set of common neighbors, then in order to be in U, all my S vertices should fall here. In order these two vertices to be in U, they should be common neighbors of all my vertices. So all my random vertices should fall in this small set, which is highly unlikely. So it's unlikely that in U there would be vertices which in pairs, in triples, in four-tuples, and so on, have few common neighbors.
You mean for every D it is true of vertices? Because it could be constant.
Yeah, for actually in... No, so D should be constant. So I assume, that D is a constant and N is big. Let me see if I really... No, actually it's for every D. It's for every D, but you see if your D becomes bigger than log, then it becomes not interesting. No, so it's for every D and you actually see immediately the proof. So I will only briefly go over the proof, but you see it's only one slide. It contains all the proof. There is no hidden additional things you need to do. So the proof is simple. You do two computations. You compute the expected size of U, and then you compute the probability that there is a bad d-tuple inside you, and you see that this probability is less than 1. So you don't expect any bad d-tuple inside you. So to see the expected size of U, it's more or less immediate, because what you know that all the degrees are roughly n over 2. So your graph has half of the edges. Then, if I pick one random vertex, the probability that it falls in the neighborhood of some vertex is half, because it should be one of these n over 2 neighbors. So if I pick s random vertices, it would be 1 half to the power s. And since you have n vertices, so in the set U, each vertex is going with probability 1 half to the s. which is 1/2 to the 1/2 log n. So you get that all together, you expect n divided by square root n, exactly square root n vertices. On the other hand, let's now count the number of bet d2 pulse. So all together you have n choose d2 pulse. And here is the crucial thing that we bias towards the d2 pulse with a big common neighborhood. Because if you have d2 pulse with a small common neighborhood, if this is the size of the neighborhood, you know that all these s vertices should fall there. So probability that one random vertex falls into the small set is very small. It's 1 over 2d. And now you put it into the power s, and when you put all the computation together, you see that you don't expect such d2 at all. So actually you get a set. In the worst case, you can say that you maybe expect one and you delete this vertex, but on the intuition level, you see that there is no d2 pulse in this set. So this is a lemma. Let me now tell you about some other conjectures in Ramsey and Turan theory, which you can try to attack using this lemma. So maybe I leave the lemma here because the lemma is more important than the proof. So what is the conjectures? So the first conjecture is, was proposed by Erdős and Bohr, and it's the following. So if you notice that when we're talking about Ramsey numbers of the cliques, they grow exponentially. So trying to understand better what makes the Ramsey number of the graph grow and how fast it should grow, Erdős and Bohr suggested to study Ramsey numbers of sparse graph. So now you need appropriate definition of sparse. So one definition would be you bound the maximal degree of the graph. If you want to relax this definition a little bit, you can bound the average degree of the graph. So you can allow big degrees, but on average you should have small number of edges. So now you should be a little bit careful, because if you bound only the average degree, and then Hamilton and the average degree would be small, but the Ramsey number would be big because the clique is there. So the common ground to avoid this thing is to bound average degree in every subgraph. So you not only bound the average degree in the graph, but you not allow, let's say, big cliques. You bound average degree in every subgraph. So in other words, it's up to a constant equivalent definition. You want your graph to be degenerate. And this means that every subgraph of your graph, if you pick it, it contains a vertex of degree smaller or equal than d. So you always have vertex of small degree. And as I said, it's somewhat more general definition than the graphs of bounded degree, because you see, for example, this complete graphs with sizes 3 and n is 3 degenerate, but it has very high degrees. So what is the conjecture of Erdős and Bohr? The conjecture is Erdős and Bohr. It's very surprising. It says that if you have sparse graph, degenerate graph, then instead of this very fast growing, which is exponential, you have only linear growth. So if you give me a big graph on n vertices, but which is degenerate, it means that average degree is bounded in every subgraph, then the Ramsey number is linear. And what this means is that if I take some constant, which depends on d, times n, and I color the complete graph on that many vertices, then at least one color will contain my graph G. So it's enough to blow the number of vertices by constant, color a complete graph on that many vertices, and then you will contain a copy of G. So let me mention some previously known results. So this conjecture is true for all graphs with bounded degree. It was a very important result proved actually using regularity lemma by Hwatel, Rodel, and Semmered and Trotter, which shows that the conjecture is true for graphs with bounded degree. So very, very large subfamily of the degenerate graph is covered by this result. Some other results were obtained later by Eaton, Graham, Rodel, Ruchinski, Alon, Channon, Shelp, Rodel, and Thomas. I will not mention explicitly what are these results. Let me mention another important result. So all these results were covered some particular subfamilies of the degenerate graph. Recently, Kostochka and Rodel proved first polynomial bound on the Ramsey number of such graphs. So without any assumption on graph G except that G is degenerate, they showed that the number is bounded by at most n square. So using this lemma with some additional results and ideas, recently with Kostochka we were able to show that the conjecture is. So what we actually showed is slightly more general result, which was conjectured by Kostochka and Rodel, which is that if you color a complete graph n to the 1 plus O small of 1 vertex, slightly bigger than linear. Slightly in parentheses. So it's bigger than, it's less than n to the 1 plus epsilon, any epsilon. Then one of the colors contains a nice graph we called Dn common, that any d vertices have n common neighbors. And then you can easily check that if you have such a graph, then you can embed there any degenerate graph just by greedy procedure. And this gives you the lower bound. And surprisingly for us, on the other hand, we showed, using some construction which uses isoperimetric properties of the cube, that this cannot be, this approach cannot be used to prove this conjecture. So somehow the lower bound which we obtained for this approach grows slightly bigger than linear, so it cannot be done. So now let me mention another problem. How much time I have?
8 minutes.
So let me mention a problem which is more related to Turan-type question. And again, so we have this R-degenerate graph. As I said, in Turan-type question for bipartite graph, we don't know any general statement which says that given a graph, some nice parameter of the graph, then you can come up with some reasonable estimate on the Turan number. So one such conjecture was made by Erdős and Simonovich in 1967. They said that take sufficiently sparse bipartite graph. Again, sparse means R degenerate. It means that every subgraph should have vertex of degree at most R. Then they conjectured that the Turan number of this graph is at most n to the 2 minus 1 over R. And this roughly is the order of magnitude which I want to recall you, which you have is incomplete or bipartite graph with parts R. So they say that no matter if your graph is really very big, but if locally it's kind of dominated by complete bipartite graph with parts R, then you can get the same upper bound on its Turan number. The lemma and its variant, and also, as usual, some other ideas, together with Alon and Krivalevich, we were able to obtain the following two new results, which somehow support this conjecture. So we were not able to prove this, but we show the following. So first of all, if instead of saying that graph is degenerate, you just bound the maximal degree in one side of the bipartite graph, but again, the graph can be huge, then you obtain the upper bound which matches this conjecture. It's not very difficult result, actually. Somehow, if you look on the old paper of Furidi from 91, you can deduce already this bound, but it was overlooked. But more important, that we can prove for R-degenerate bipartite graph the bound which is n to the square minus 10 over R, which comes somewhat close, at least in it has the same structure, 2 minus some constant divided by R, as conjectured by Erdős and Simonovich. So, and let me, in the end... Sorry?
Right.
Okay.
The pen
should
be
gone. Oh, sorry, yeah. Make it. Yeah. Okay. So it's weaker than the conjectured bound. And let me mention one corollary of this result, so this result actually is true not only for fixed graph age, but you can make your age grow, and then you obtain some partial progress on another old conjecture of Erdős, which is the following, and somehow I want to mention this because it's, I think, very nice conjecture. So Erdős asks the following question. So you remember that, again, we're trying to understand the Ramsey number of the graphs. So we know that if you take clique, that these numbers grow exponentially. If you take sparse graph, these numbers grow linearly. So now I ask you the following question and give you m edges. So I'm not talking about the vertices. The number of edges is fixed. I give you m edges and I ask, please construct the graph which have the biggest possible Ramsey number. So you have m edges, and what you want to construct, you want to construct the graph whose Ramsey number grows as fast as possible. So of course, knowing these two examples, dense and sparse, you will choose to construct dense graph. So if you construct, for example, complete graph, then having m edges, your complete graph should have square root m vertices. Or you construct complete bipartite graph, again, the Ramsey number grows exponentially. It again will have some constant square root m vertices. So therefore, you suspect that this is the best you can do. So the growth of the Ramsey number of such graph would be exponential in square root m, because these two examples show you this behavior, and you know the sparse graphs actually have smaller Ramsey numbers. So this is the essence of conjecture of Erdős. So Erdős conjectured that more or less this is the best you can do. So if you give me m edges, then I cannot do much better than taking complete graph or complete bipartite graph. The Ramsey numbers will grow exponentially in square root m. So what will follow from this corollary is that the conjecture of Erdős is true for bipartite graphs. And this is tight. So if you give me a bipartite graph and you tell me that you can use only m edges, then no matter what I do, the graph which I obtain will have Ramsey number bounded by exponential in the square root m. And using some other ideas, we can come quite close to the conjecture bound for the general graph. Again, it's with Alon and Krivalevich. We have here extra log m. Now let me finish my talk saying that this lemma and its variants has few more additional applications. Actually, I mentioned already that it appeared in the papers. It started with the paper of Rodel and Kostochka, and they were interested in the question of Trotter on Ramsey numbers of bipartite graph. Gowers used this tool to give a new proof of Balogh-Semperidy theorem, which does not use regularity lemma and gets much better bound. It was essential later to get better bound on the density of sets not containing arithmetic progression. I use this lemma for some questions in so-called Ramsey-Turan theory. And recently with Alon and Krivalevich, we used these tools to obtain some progress on question of Erdős-McKay on the size of induced subgraphs of Ramsey graphs. I will not go inside every particular application, but just to show you that there are more applications, and I hope that it would be much more to come. So I will stop here.
Questions? Let me make just a short remark. Erdős has promised many prizes for many of the problems mentioned here. I guess the Erdős estate, whatever it means, you'll be happy to pay. So if you're looking for some extra income, you can think about any of those problems. So thank you, speaker.